The GI Research Foundation was able to produce this podcast with a generous sponsorship from Metro Infusion Centers. Welcome to Visceral, the podcast of the GI Research Foundation. I'm your host, Anna Gomberg. I'm thrilled today to welcome Assistant Professor at the University of Chicago Medicine IBD Center, Tenzin Choden. Dr. Choden is spearheading really important work in the field of inflammatory bowel disease and also an area we don't always talk about with inflammatory bowel disease, aging. And Dr. Choden received a grant from the GI Research Foundation to establish research programs and facilities to investigate the needs of this aging population, which we all know is growing all the time with our boomer parents and grandparents and others in our population. And those people also have Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis and need special care. So welcome, Dr. Choden. I am so excited to hear and learn from you today.
Thank you so much for having me on the podcast.
Oh, we're so excited. So one really interesting thing about your research is that it focuses on older adults. And I think one thing that we think about Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis is that we find a lot of diagnoses for those diseases in young people. So even teenagers and children are the ones who we think of as getting Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis. And people who are otherwise, you know, healthy and living, you know, without other comorbidities that might be something that older adults have to contend with as well. So I guess my question for you is, do older people get IBD and how is it different for them than for these other groups?
Mm-hmm. So yes, older adults absolutely get IBD. We do traditionally think of Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis as conditions that often start in young adulthood. And that's still true for many people. But there is a second peak of diagnosis that tends to happen later in life, often after the age of 60. And that group of patients is growing. So we think of that group to now represent anywhere between 15 to 20% of new IBD diagnoses in older adults. You know, what's additionally important is that, you know, we have two parallel trends that are happening. So one, are new patients being diagnosed with older onset IBD, and also people who have lived with IBD for decades and that are now aging, so entering this group of patients that are over 60 with IBD. So, you know, this really makes it essential to truly understand how disease biology and treatment responses might differ between these two cohorts.
So are these two groups of people, are they very different?
So the short answer to that is we don't truly know. I think that's part of the reason for doing this research. You know, we see there are many layers of complexities that occur when we're taking care of older patients with IBD. And the phenotypes of patients who have older onset IBD, so patients who are older than 60 when they have their first diagnosis, is not quite clear as to whether or not this is truly different from general adult onset IBD, generally patients who are getting diagnosed in their 20s and in their 30s. So what happens to these patients? Do they respond to treatments the same way? Do they have more severe phenotypes, meaning do they have worse outcomes? All of these things are still to be investigated.
Yeah, I think we kind of know what a phenotype is, but can you tell us a little bit about what that word means just in case?
So when we use the word phenotype, we're talking essentially about, in a simple sense, what is the disease course for the patient like? How does this disease express itself in the patient? Every single patient with inflammatory bowel disease presents in a slightly different way, where the disease might be located, how the disease and how aggressive it might be, how quickly it might worsen or complications may develop. So all of these things bundled together would be the disease phenotype.
Oh, okay. Kind of sounds like genotype. It sounds like other ways that we talk about these categories in medicine. So I understand that you received a grant to study IBD in this aging population. And what are you seeking to discover? What are you seeking to investigate?
Right. So I think there are a few key things that we're trying to learn. The first is, what does older onset IBD actually look like? So first, we're building a detailed registry of patients that were diagnosed later in life so that we can describe their disease patterns, their treatments, and their outcomes in a systematic way rather than relying on assumptions or extrapolating from younger patients.
What is a registry exactly?
Sure. A registry is, so what we're doing initially is that we're building a retrospective registry. So in a retrospective database or a retrospective registry, we're looking backwards. We are looking at data that has actually already been collected as part of routine care for patients. So things like diagnoses, medications, hospitalizations. We then go back into those records and analyze patterns. So the advantage is that we can study large numbers of patients relatively quickly and efficiently because the data has already been collected. The downside there, of course, is that you're limited to whatever information was recorded at the time, which might not necessarily include every single nuanced detail or perhaps a geriatric focus detail that we might want to include.
Are there other registries for other patient groups?
Absolutely. There are many different registries within inflammatory bowel disease. So one such that I could name is the PIANO registry, which is a registry that looked at pregnancy in inflammatory bowel disease, and that tracked thousands of women that were going through pregnancies and that stayed on biologic treatments and other different IBD treatments throughout their pregnancy, and also tracked their children.
I'm sorry, I interrupted you. So you were speaking a little bit about the objectives of the study itself.
Right. No problem. So our first objective is really trying to understand what does older onset IBD look like we just discussed. And we're doing this in two different ways. We talked a little bit about what a retrospective database study would look like. And that's the first phase where we're building out our experience at the University of Chicago over the last two decades in patients who have had older onset data IBD. And then now we're going to work in the opposite direction of time and look forward using a prospective registry as well. So that's the plan moving forward, which is to enroll patients now at the time of their diagnosis. Again, these are older onset patients, and then follow them over a course of time, collecting now exactly the data that we think are important, which could now include things like frailty measures, muscle strength, a detailed medication history, quality of life, imaging labs, things like that. It's slower and it's more resource intensive, but it really allows us to gather all the appropriate data and the specific questions that we would want to look at in this patient population. So this is sort of the work that I'd like to do with older onset IBD. Now, at the same time, I'd like for us to be able to also understand more about just general patients who are older with IBD. So again, that aging group, patients that are aging into the group older than 60 years of age. We treat older adults the same way that we treat everyone else. And there are, I believe, some nuances to how we might need to approach the treatment of older adults. So for example, just a very basic thing would be the data that we have that looks at all of our different medication treatments. So we rely a lot on clinical trial data, which is how medications are initially approved. Well, patients who are older than 65 represent 0.6% of all patients enrolled in clinical trials. So really, they're not represented at all. And a lot of this has to do with age exclusions or sometimes comorbidities like cancer that might exclude them from clinical trials. So really we're extrapolating information from clinical trials that are largely on younger patients to our use in older adults. So an additional part of what I'd like to do is really study the outcomes of older adults with IBD in a real world setting. So obviously here at the University of Chicago, we treat a lot of patients and we treat a lot of patients over the age of 60. So we're trying to look at how do we treat these patients, who gets advanced therapies, who stays on steroids, how these choices relate to infections, hospitalizations, quality of life, So all of that type of information.
That's so interesting. I had no idea that there was that much of a disparity in terms of what who gets studied age-wise in a clinical trial, but of course that makes sense. And if someone is 60 years old or 65 years old, they have had, and let's say they were diagnosed in their 20s, they have lived through so many iterations of medication, medical therapies, perhaps surgical intervention, and they would have experienced all of those different at different points in their life, and with a whole just a tremendous number of variables for even in an individual to think about it at a population level. That's really outstanding. That's really very, very amazing to think about. And it would make sense that, of course, you would need to be looking at that prospectively, asking them at the time of that you're gathering data, like what has your experience been? Because it may not be captured in those other clinical information. That's very daunting. You mentioned that setting up these registries, particularly the prospective registry, is really resource intensive. What goes into setting up a registry? How does this, where are these monies going? And how does this work at an institution like the University of Chicago?
So first off, thank you to the GI Research Foundation for awarding this pilot grant so that we can start to do some of this important work. We wouldn't be able to do any of this without the support of GIRF. So, I think in terms of setting up a prospective registry, this really goes hand in hand with our day-to-day clinical care of our patients at the University of Chicago. We're very blessed that we're at such a robust IBD center, where we have a large volume of patients. So when we meet patients in our clinic, that is the time where we're able to obviously not only provide clinical care, but also consider enrolling them or asking them to enroll in a prospective registry like this, sharing with them, what the research is about, what we'd like to do, and how we'd like to get this type of information. So typically we would have research coordinators reach out to them, enroll them in the studies. And then at that point, once they're enrolled into a registry, at each different touch point with the healthcare system or with gastroenterology, at every single imaging study or a colonoscopy or an intestinal ultrasound, clinic visit, lab visits, all of those different parameters will then be recorded and become part of the registry so that we can understand their disease course and how, again, they respond to different therapies and get a better picture of what the phenotype of the disease might be.
So resources, almost as always, are people, time,
yes.
in every industry, and it is no different here at U of C. I have the privilege of reading, your work and some of your applications and your studies, and so I know that part of what your larger vision for this is to take it even beyond the University of Chicago, where we of course are so thrilled to have such a robust program, but there are centers elsewhere in the United States and around the world that are capable of performing some of this work. What are some of the challenges for, or what are the opportunities and challenges for setting up those multi-center studies? And what is your vision for building your empire, as maybe it might be?
Right. So logistically, multi-center work requires a lot of coordination, shared protocols, IRB approvals at every single site. So that's the Institutional Review Board that goes over all research protocols, data sharing agreements, as well as having a centralized data coordinating team. So that does take a lot of time, effort, and funding. There are really great registries that have already been established within IBD, as we kind of previously alluded to, for example, the piano registry. So there are definitely previous blueprints of how this has been able to be done for very specific populations within IBD. So like pregnancy and IBD. Because we've had registries in the past looking at different patient populations within IBD, there are previous blueprints that we can look to while we're formulating our, multi-center prospective registry. And despite all of the effort, the payoff can be enormous. So multi-center studies really let us include more diverse patients, and they can help us generate findings that are more generalizable, which is particularly important for older adults who've been historically underrepresented in clinical trials, as we talked about earlier.
That makes total sense, because otherwise you're really limited by geography and access and other things that have to do with the individual medical center where you're located. So that makes perfect sense to me. An unenviable task, but also really exciting. And I know that you'll be able to capitalize on this work and build it out even further. This is such a special population. What makes you interested in it? Why do you care so much?
Yeah. Well, as I started off, I was seeing a lot of older adults in my clinic. And what really struck me early on was how little data that we have to guide their care. Again, you know, their exclusion from most clinical trials, and yet they're actually the fastest growing group of patients with IBD. So, you know, clinically, some of their needs are different. Like we've talked about the frailty, comorbidities, polypharmacy, and really our current treatment algorithms weren't necessarily built around them. So that gap is really sort of what drew me to this area.
Well, I think that your passion for it is really clear, and we're really lucky to have you working in this area, in this domain that seems very underserved. And we're so grateful that you are working with us. What do you think, if you were mapping out the next few years of your work and your career, what do you think the future holds for your research? And I can think of just innumerable ways that your work is going to help improve the lives of people with IBD. But what do you think about that? And what are you excited about?
Yeah, I think there are a lot of next steps. You know, again, sort of building out what we have here first and seeing what information we can glean from our patient cohort. And then after that, the next steps, I think, really are scaling and integrating what we've started here. And we talked a little bit about our goals of perhaps creating a prospective registry and a multi-center prospective registry, something that we can really include a lot of patients into. On another level, I'd like for my research to lead us towards having more precision when we're looking at risk stratification for older adults with IBD. So being able to use combinations of clinical data, frailty indices, imaging, and perhaps even eventually metabolomic or microbiome signatures to really predict which older adults are at higher risk of complications and who can safely receive more aggressive treatments, or who might benefit more so from surgeries first. And my hope is that, you know, long term, all of this work leads to essentially filling that research gap, leading to more practical tools that we can use at the bedside, maybe a simple scoring system or an ultrasound-based measure, something that can help guide our therapy choices, our steroid choices, our timing of surgery in older adults.
Oh, it sounds amazing. It is really, the sky is really the limit, it seems like. And given how important and what a huge proportion of our total population is aging, it seems critically important right now to invest. And I'm so glad that the GI Research Foundation did. Thank you so, so much for taking the time to talk to us today. I am delighted, and I can't wait to have you back to hear where this research is next year and the year after, and to just follow your really promising career here in GI. So we're very grateful. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much for having me again.
It was our pleasure.
Research on underserved communities is critical. It broadens our understanding of disease and leads to better, more equitable patient care. At the GI Research Foundation, identifying gaps in knowledge and funding the work to fill them is at the heart of what we do, because closing those gaps can truly change patients' lives. As you've heard today, we still have so much to learn about IBD in older adults. One important and often overlooked challenge is sarcopenia, the loss of muscle and strength that can affect quality of life as we age. Emerging evidence suggests it may be linked to inflammation in IBD, but many questions remain, and only research can give us answers. Join us next month when we welcome Dr. Choden back to the podcast to explore her newest research on the connection between sarcopenia and IBD and what it could mean for aging well with this disease.
Today's episode is made possible by Metro Infusion Centers. Metro Infusion Centers, with over 220 infusion centers nationwide, providing trusted and life-saving therapies to patients for over 30 years in a comfortable and cost-effective environment. Thank you for listening to this episode of the podcast Visceral from the GI Research Foundation. This episode was written, edited, and produced by me, Anna Gomberg, and edited and mixed by Luke Pahalski. Special thanks to the talented Michael Collins Dowden, who composed our theme music, and executive producer Allison Thielen. We hope you will join us next time, and until then, to access other podcasts and learn more about research to treat, prevent, and cure digestive diseases, please visit the website at giresearchfoundation.org. Please like and subscribe to Visceral on all your favorite podcast platforms, and until next time, listen to your gut.